Mr. Phillips paid no heed to Gilbert. "I am sorry to see a pupil of mine displaying such a temper and such a vindictive spirit," he said in a solemn tone, as if the mere fact of being a pupil of his ought to root out all evil passions from the heart of small, imperfect mortals. "Anne, go and stand on the platform in front of the blackboard for the rest of the afternoon." Anne would have infinitely prepared a whipping to this punishment under which her sensitive spirit quivered from a whiplash. With a white, set face, she obeyed. Mr. Phillips took a chalk crayon and wrote on the blackboard above her head, "Anne Shirley has a very bad temper. Anne Shirley must learn to control her temper." And then read it out loud so that even the primer class, who couldn't read writing, should understand it. Anne stood there the rest of the afternoon with that legend above her. She did not cry or hang her head. Anger was still too hot in her heart for that, and it sustained her amid all her agony and humiliation. With resentful eyes and passion-red cheeks, she confronted alike Diana's sympathetic gaze and Charlie Sloane's indignant nods and Josie Pye's malicious smiles. As for Gilbert Blythe, she would not even look at him. She would never look at him again. She would never speak to him. When school was dismissed, Anne marched out with her red head held high. Gilbert Blythe tried to intercept her at the porch. "I'm awfully sorry I made fun of your hair," Anne whispered contritely. "Honest I am. Don't be mad for keeps now." Anne swept by disdainfully, without look or sign of hearing. "How could you, Anne?" breathed Diana as they went down the road, half reproachfully, half admiringly. Diana felt that she could never have resisted Gilbert's play. "I shall never forgive Gilbert Blythe," said Anne firmly, "and Mr. Phillips spelled my name without an E too. The iron has entered into my soul, Diana." Diana hadn't the least idea what Anne meant, but she understood it was something terrible. "You mustn't mind Gilbert making fun of your hair," she said soothingly. "Why, he makes fun of all the girls. He laughs at mine because it's too black. He called me a crow a dozen times, and I never heard him apologise for anything before either." "There's a great deal of difference between being called a crow and being called carrots," said Anne with dignity. "Gilbert Blythe has hurt my feelings excruciatingly, Diana." It is possible the matter might have blown over without more excruciation if nothing else had happened. But when things begin to happen, they are apt to keep on. Avonlea scholars often spent noon hour picking gum in Mr. Bell's spruce grove over the hill and across his big pasture field. From there, they would keep an eye on Eben Wright's house, where the master boarded. When they saw Mr. Phillips emerging therefrom, they ran from the schoolhouse, but the distance being about three times longer than Mr. Wright's lane, they were very apt to arrive there, breathless and gasping, some 3 minutes too late. On the following day, Mr. Phillips was seized with one of his spasmodic fits of reform and announced before going home to dinner that he should expect to find all the scholars in their seats when he returned. Anyone who came in late would be punished. All the boys and some of the girls went to Mr. Bell's spruce grove as usual, fully intending to stay only long enough to pick a chew. But spruce groves are seductive, and yellow knots of gum beguiling. They picked and loitered and strayed. And as usual, the first thing that recalled them to the sense of the flight of time was Jimmy Glover shouting from the top of a patriotic old spruce, "Master's coming!" The girls who were on the ground started first and managed to reach the schoolhouse in time, but without a second to spare. The boys, who had to wriggle hastily down from the trees, were later, and Anne, who had not been picking gum at all, but was wandering happily in the far end of the grove, waist-deep among the bracken, singing softly to herself with a wreath of rice lilies on her hair, as if she were some wild divinity of shadowy places, was latest of all. Anne could run like a deer, however. Run she did, with the impish result that she overtook the boys at the door and was swept into the schoolhouse among them just as Mr. Phillips was in the act of hanging up his hat. Mr. Phillips' brief reforming energy was over. He didn't want the bother of punishing a dozen pupils, but it was necessary to do something to save his word. So he looked about for a scapegoat and found it in Anne, who had dropped into her seat, gasping for breath, with a forgotten lily wreath hanging askew over one ear and giving her a particularly rakish and dishevelled appearance. "Anne Shirley, since you seem to be so fond of the boys' company, we shall indulge your taste for it this afternoon," he said sarcastically. "Take those flowers out of your hair and sit with Gilbert Blythe." The other boys sniggered. Diana, turning pale with pity, plucked the wreath from Anne's hair and squeezed her hand. Anne stared at the master as if turned to stone. "Did you hear what I said, Anne?" queried Mr. Phillips sternly. "Yes, sir," said Anne slowly, "but I didn't suppose you really meant it." "I assure you I did," still with the sarcastic inflection which all the children and Anne especially hated. It flicked on the raw. "Obey me at once." For a moment, Anne looked as if she meant to disobey. Then, realising that there was no help for it, she rose haughtily, stepped across the aisle, sat down beside Gilbert Blythe and buried her face in her arms on the desk. Ruby Gillis, who got a glimpse of it as she went down, told the others going home from school that she'd actually never seen anything like it. It was so white with awful little red spots in it. To Anne, this was the end of all things. It was bad enough to be singled out for punishment from among a dozen equally guilty ones. It was worse still to be sent to sit with a boy, but that boy should be Gilbert Blythe was heaping insult or injury to a degree utterly unbearable. Anne felt she could not bear it, and it would be of no use to try. Her whole being seethed with shame and anger and humiliation. At first, the other scholars looked and whispered and giggled and nudged, but as Anne never lifted her head, and as Gilbert worked fractions as if his whole soul was absorbed in them, and them only, they soon returned to their own tasks, and Anne was forgotten. When Mr. Phillips called the history class out, Anne should have gone, but Anne did not move. And Mr. Phillips, who had been writing some verses to Priscilla before he called the class, was thinking about the obstinate rhyme still, and never missed her. Once, when nobody was looking, Gilbert took from his desk a little pink candy heart with a gold motto on it. "You are sweet," and slipped it under the curve of Anne's arm. Whereupon Anne arose, took the pink heart gingerly between the tips of her fingers, dropped it on the floor, ground it to powder beneath her heel, and resumed her position without deigning to bestow a glance on Gilbert. When school went out, Anne marched to her desk, ostentatiously took out everything therein, books and writing tablet, pen and ink, testament and arithmetic, and piled them neatly on her cracked slate. "What are you taking all those things home for, Anne?" Diana wanted to know, as soon as they were out on the road. She had not dared to ask the question before. "I am not coming back to school any more," said Anne. Diana gasped and stared at Anne to see if she meant it. "Will Marilla let you stay home?" she asked. "She'll have to," said Anne. "I'll never go to school to that man again."